Hey everyone, welcome to the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, and today we're going to be talking about why most meditators stall. So meditation is one of the most reliable tools for recognizing your true nature. And what I've found over the years teaching it, practicing it, is that hundreds or even thousands of people begin meditation, but very few of those people go far enough with it to see what it's really about, you know, to go into the deep end of the pool, as it were, and to discover what it can reveal to you about your identity. Not because meditation isn't powerful, but because often people stall on the meditative path. And today what we're going to really get at the root of is the reasons why this happens, because if you really understand these reasons and you avoid falling into the traps that we're going to be laying out, you will be much better placed to go far with your meditation practice and really take it to its ultimate potential. Meditation is a proven tool for contacting awareness. It's used across all spiritual traditions. And what tends to happen is people will get inspired to begin it. And they will go somewhere along the spectrum of never having meditated before to having an awakening, or having recognition is what I call spiritual awakening, recognition. But few people really persist long enough. And the result is that most meditators get some benefits from it, you know, psychological benefits, emotional benefits, relational benefits, and they might even have some spiritual insight, some genuine recognition, but not really like the deep, lasting recognition that meditation can offer you. And there's three main problems here. There's three main reasons this happens, I think. And this is evidence I've garnered mostly just through observation and through experience teaching and experience talking to people, other meditators. First problem, and it's a really huge problem, is unrealistic expectations. Now, when you start anything new, you often have unrealistic expectations simply because you've never gotten good at the thing before, so you can't really know what it's like to be good at it. So you end up having lots of ideas. Now, sometimes those ideas undersell what is possible, but oftentimes, and this is probably more frequent, is that they oversell. So you kind of project all kinds of fantastical ideas about what it's going to mean to get good at something, when you don't really know. And the same thing happens with meditation. You know, what do people expect when they first start out with meditation? They expect to feel calm instantly. They expect to feel peaceful all the time. They expect to have wisdom come to them quickly. And they expect some kind of rapid transformation. Now, this is, again, it's inherent to the process of starting something, but also we're kind of programmed. You know, the way marketing works is that you have to promise benefits of some kind, otherwise people are much less likely to buy your product. And what happens with meditation marketing is that, you know, the calm and the peace and the wisdom and the transformation, that is what is marketed. And, you know, when you're sold something on that basis, you typically, because it often in marketing as well, there's a bias towards making it immediate and making it seem short term. And so this is a huge problem. When you put the two together, you know, our inherent inability to understand things when we're not particularly good at them, and marketing and how it works nowadays, we're in a tough bind here as beginner meditators. And part of me believes it's only getting worse. Maybe that's just an experience, you know, because of my bad experiences with this. But I suspect it is getting worse with time as people's attention spans get shorter, and, you know, as we're less willing to tolerate, you know, the being terrible at things. Again, I don't know if this is the case, but I'm just suspect. And this really transfers well into what I've observed teaching people. Students tend to expect, now listen, I'm 30 now, and I started teaching meditation when I was 28, I believe. People twice my age and even older than that would often come to my classes and expect me to sort of deliver transformation to them. You know, I would give them some radical technique or some instant change. And that is, well, it's problematic to come to that as being a student. And it's because you're not really willing to learn meditation as it is. And also, it's a huge burden to put a teacher under. Now, I didn't feel a burden because I could realize that this is what they were doing and that wasn't on me to solve that. But, you know, it's quite a shocking thing to experience when you're in your late 20s and people double your age are coming in and expecting something fantastic. Not to say that meditation isn't fantastic, but they have unrealistic expectations. And I would have to tell them, listen, meditation takes time. It requires a lot of persistence. And most of the time when you're meditating, quite frankly, especially in the early years, you're going to feel like nothing is happening. You're going to not really know often why you're doing it. You're going to be doubting. You're going to feel like there's no progress. You're going to wonder, this meditation thing is just nonsense. Listen, think of it like this. You're learning something. You're learning something new. And if you've ever learned something new, which we all have, we've all learned many things from scratch, you'll know that until you get it, you don't get it. And the don't getting it part is often quite painful. And it's just the way human learning works. And meditation is no different. There's a key reality here with meditation. And it's that meditation doesn't always feel calm, peaceful, or ecstatic. And if you come in expecting it to, and this is what meditation beginners do most of the time, you're going to sabotage it because you're missing a fundamental ingredient, which is not to have any expectations and to fully be with your experience as it arises and passes. What actually happens with meditation practice is that, for want of a better expression, it burns away your ideals and it dissolves your expectations of what it should be like. And eventually you just learn to work with your experience as it is without preferring. And this might sound like resignation, but it's not resignation. It's actually embodiment. It's actually re-owning your experience. It's not a passive, I'll never feel good ever again because here I've learned about meditation and even that won't make me feel good. No, it's a totally different relationship to what feeling good and feeling bad means. So that's why having ideals and expectations is an obstacle. Now, listen, it's pretty unavoidable, as a beginner, but you have to realize that you have to let go of it at some point. And if you don't, you will stall and you will stop meditating. And this is one of the reasons why most people do, because they never overcome that barrier. All right, the second big problem that I've found is very much related to the first one, but it's something even more fundamental. It's basically that beginner meditators want to get somewhere else. There's a core human pattern that I want you to realize in yourself and in other people, and it's that there's a basic subtle rejection of the present moment. If that sounds too Eckhart Tolle or too woo-woo for you, people just aren't where they are and content with it, literally. Watch people sitting on a bus. Watch people waiting on a bus. Watch people waiting in line. Watch people when there's not much going on. Watch people even when they're supposed to be having fun. Watch them, quite honestly, and watch yourself in all these situations and feel what it's like to be you in these situations. And you'll realize that this is just it's a fundamental part of the human condition, the subtle rejection of the present. Now, this enters meditation, of course, because meditation in one sense is it's taking like artillery and just completely destroying that entire mechanism. So even then, this tendency shows up in meditation. Meditators will often meditate as a means to an end. So they'll do it to relax, or they'll do it to escape, or they'll do it to have unusual experiences, or to feel special, or to build some kind of identity, instead of just using it to rest in the present. And this is simply because they're applying, or the core human tendency of rejecting the present is now getting expressed through meditation. So it's meditation is now the way to avoid the present, you see. Now listen, again, like the previous problem, it's very normal at the beginning, because again, you've not meditated enough to learn that this is like one of the main roadblocks here. But, and also because when you've just started meditating, you've not really developed an ability to rest in the present. And actually, you might have a bit of, you know, your nervous system, frankly, isn't tuned to being in the present. your body patterns, your emotional patterns, your mental patterns are all pointing you away from it. So it's no wonder. And it's normal at the beginning. But again, like with the previous problem, it eventually becomes a fork in the road, because ultimately meditation is not about different states or avoidance or feeling calm or feeling this way or that way. And it's not about getting somewhere. It's not about changing what you're experiencing per se. What meditation is really about is the ability to be here, fully here now, to understand your awareness, to learn to process your experience. When I say experience, I just mean your mind, body, sense experience, to process that fully, and to see how your identity forms moment by moment. And you might wonder, well, how does this fit with enlightenment, awakening, or recognition, Ross? Because you're talking about meditation can lead you to insight into these things, but you're saying it doesn't get you anywhere. Well, let me give you an analogy. When you cannot drive, the act of driving seems miraculous to you because you don't know how to do it, right? So if you're in a car with someone, you're sitting there looking at them, doing all the things they need to do to drive the car, and it just seems like magic, okay? Now, what happens when you are able to drive? None of this now seems magic at all. It just seems like the act of driving. It just seems ordinary. There's nothing spectacular. You just kind of shrug your shoulders and do it. So the same goes with insight, with spiritual insight, with recognition, with awakening. And in the beginning, it might seem dramatic and spectacular. And I spoke about this last week when we were talking about why the word enlightenment is the wrong word. Enlightenment seems spectacular and dramatic when you're first sort of introduced to it and when you've never really truly tasted it, but then it just becomes obvious and inherent. It doesn't seem like something even to talk about, really. It just seems like something you've overlooked. Almost like seeing through an optical illusion. The image doesn't change, but you're just seeing what you couldn't see before. So although meditation does get you there, quote unquote, you're not actually getting anywhere, really. You're not getting somewhere else. You're just recognizing the nature of consciousness. And so that's the problem, is that if you are really attached to this idea of getting somewhere, you're never going to, quote unquote, get to where meditation actually takes you, which is just here and now and the ordinariness of your own true nature. Because meditation just reveals reality as it is. It just reveals to you there's nothing outside this moment. There's nothing outside your experience. There's nothing outside what is happening right now. And so if you're constantly trying to get away from now and this moment and what is in your current experience, you're never grasping what meditation is really about. Problem number three, folks, is poor or shallow instruction. So this is something that it troubles me as a teacher. Many teachings are diluted, simplified, or market-driven. That is, they are adjusted to fit what people will buy, basically. So what does this mean? That many teachings nowadays are focused on stress relief, emotional regulation, things like overthinking and neurosis. You know, it's the emotional and the psychological things that meditation can address. Now, these things matter, you know, and when you're meditating, you will likely experience benefits in this regard. And I've spoken about this a lot on this podcast in the past. The problem is when we reduce meditation to that, because what we're doing is we're ignoring the deeper aspect of meditation and the core thing that meditation does that a lot of other things cannot do, like a lot of other well-being tools do not do, and that is revealing the nature of consciousness and of self. We don't want to reduce meditation to just a well-being tool, and that is often what people think meditation is. It's just a well-being tool. And, you know, even people who meditate using meditation in this way will look at you funny if you start talking about recognition or enlightenment or awakening, because they simply don't know about it. This is where the teacher is important, because a teacher defines the path. You know, a teacher will tell you where you are and where you're going, and they will shape the entire teaching around that. And so this shapes your path and it shapes your goals. Now listen, if you're with a teacher and what they teach is just calm and emotional relief, then this is all you're going to pursue, because you simply don't know anything else unless you happen to come across something like deep psychology, which talks a lot about the deeper end of the meditation pool. The risk is that you never encounter the deeper purpose, and you never realize that meditation is about discovering who you are beyond concepts, beyond identity, beyond your self-image. And so what you'll realize is that if you're with a really advanced teacher, the way that they frame meditation will be very different to someone who's doing it as a well-being tool. They will show you the deeper purpose. If they sense you're not ready, they're not just going to like flood you with it, but they will mention it, and you will sense that there's something deeper they're not revealing, probably. And they will point you beyond just the well-being aspect. And if you happen to find teachers like this very early on in your journey, it's going to shape your entire meditation journey, because you're going to be more open. You're going to realize that there is something more profound than just the well-being part of meditation, right? And your whole path is going to be oriented to something deeper. So that's why the instruction is so important, and that's why the way meditation is framed is so important, because it kind of, if the way you encounter it to begin with can really shape your entire path. And listen, the fundamental problem beyond what I've said here, it's all pointing to a fundamental problem, and it's that meditators simply do not want this. They don't just want this. They don't just want their own being. They don't just want their own self. They don't just want their own body, mind, experience. They want exotic experience. They want altered states. They want mind-blowing moments. They want knowledge. They want something else. They want to be a different person. They want to be enlightened. They want to be a sage. They don't really want presence and groundedness and embodiment, because when you have these things, you realize that they're actually really ordinary in a way that can feel threatening to a goal-oriented approach or the idea that you're going to become someone special. This is really what it's about. Because the real path is not a path, really. There is no meditation path. Ultimately, the path is here, it's now, and it's always available, and it always has been available, and it always will be, no matter how much you meditate or don't meditate. It's not somewhere else, it's not going to come later, and it's not after progress in ultimate instance. Now, it's a paradox, because you can only say this with any real authenticity when you've meditated a lot. So it's kind of like, as I said, the meditation burns away your illusions about meditation. That's really what it does. However, if you walk a path that is always pointing you away from the present, you're never going to get to the present, quote unquote. And again, I know I may be tying myself in words, but it's a paradoxical thing that it ultimately isn't a paradox, but the way we use language can make it seem like a paradox. It's interesting because I've known not that many, but enough experienced meditators in my life to tell you with full honesty that even when people have insight to some degree, they're still chasing something. They still like want to build it into something. They still want to I was going to say discover more. The desire to discover more is actually healthy. The problem is when you're building it into something and you're trying to discover more as a substitute for present awareness. You know, I suppose the way I could say it is that a lot of even pretty experienced meditators, they're still not comfortable with present awareness. And that just, I mean, it's interesting because even the feeling of not being comfortable with present awareness will make you practice more, which makes you more comfortable with present awareness, which undoes the need to practice. You see, it's a paradox. It's like a dog chasing the tail. It's like the dog has to keep chasing the tail to realize that they're never going to get the tail, and the entire solution is to stop chasing the tail, right? So basically, most experienced meditators are still chasing their tail. They have realized to some degree that that's what they're doing, but not really, Otherwise, they wouldn't build an identity around meditation. Now, I know because I've done this myself, you know, I don't want to say I'm fully stopped chasing my meditation tail, as it were. But even now, as I'm talking to you, I can realize that even talking about this is chasing my tail, because I'm talking about a goal. I'm talking about making meditation into something. I'm talking about refining our meditation practice. Now, what is that? That is tail chasing, right? So even me speaking, this is tail chasing. It goes very, very deep. Like, literally anything you are doing that separates you from present awareness is tail chasing, right? Now, can we ever stop 100% tail chasing? I don't know. I'll have to keep chasing my tail to find out. But I just want to convey the fundamental mechanism. Whenever we're looking away from the present, whenever we're conceptualizing the present, we're actually chasing our tail, and we're not just resting in the present. You see? The real meditation path is to remain fully here in all situations and to never turn away. And that might sound trivial, but actually that is the path. Like, that is that is you. If you can do that, you are recognizing who you are fundamentally. Who you are. Who are you, you might ask? Well, you are experience. You are this. You are everything. And so what's been happening your entire life is that you've been layering on top of this fundamental truth about who you are. You've been layering on top of it this story that, first of all, you are not this. And that story is so layered on that you don't... It's layered on so thick that what I'm saying right now might sound ridiculous to you. And it's layered on so thick that it will come as a big shock when you realize what I'm talking about. And it'll come as a shock, but it'll also be shockingly obvious at the same time. Like, shockingly scary in a certain way, but shockingly obvious. You are experience. You've been layering on the idea that you're not, and you've been layering on the idea that somewhere out there, somewhere outside of your current experience, in some other place and in some other time, in some future where you are different in some way, you will find your true self. You will find your joy. You will find your own fullness. You have to realize that this is all a story in your own fullness. This is literally it's an entire kind of mechanism that is occurring in present awareness, right? What meditation does is it shows you that at ever deeper and deeper levels. and of course, when you start out in meditation, you don't see this. So the meditation, as I said earlier, just becomes enfolded within that very mechanism of chasing and of looking away and of not thinking and of not knowing that you are really, you are this and you are everything and you are full and complete right now. Regardless of the actual configuration you're in, regardless of what emotions you're actually experiencing, fundamentally you are full. Meditation just gets enfolded in that, so it becomes another tool for you to chase that fullness that you think you're lacking, right? So the path home, as it were, again, paradoxical language, dog chasing the tail language, but just accept that it's paradoxical. The path home is to stay with your present experience. And the more you do that, the more you will realize that your present experience is all there is. that there isn't literally nothing else. You cannot find anything else. That is the ultimate resolution of this, is that you will realize that you are just a dog chasing the tail. You're looking for something outside of you. Which is an impossible task, really. And the meditation path is simply the burning away of that mechanism. And yes, you will have, you know, the more miserable you are in life, the more this fire of looking for something outside of you is burning. You're like desperately looking for something else. And, you know, with meditation, it becomes a smaller fire, and it becomes like, you know, a fire that is almost dying, and then it will become just embers slowly just glowing. And then, I don't know if this happens or not, because I honestly don't think I've reached that point. Otherwise, I don't even know if I would be speaking about it right now. But in terms of like the fire metaphor, theoretically, we can say that the embers will eventually just burn out, and all you're left with is yourself, and there is no striving, right? So the three problems and the reasons why meditation, the reasons why meditators stall, is aligned perfectly with this, because fundamentally they're looking for something else. And what meditation does is show you that there is nothing else, very literally. And so the whole path is coming to terms with that fact. And really, meditators stalling is some variation of just falling off the path at some intermediate point, right? When they're maybe starting to realize what it's really about, and they just can't stomach it. And they just want to stay in, I'm going to say illusion, but I don't mean that to be judgmental. It's just the human condition, right? It's just our condition is to look elsewhere, right? And to turn away from the present. Just to stay, they want to stay in that mechanism. They may not frame it like that, but fundamentally that's what's happening, right? So that is why meditators stall. And I want you to look out for these three problems. The problem of having poor instruction that just focuses on well-being, which, you know, well-being, feeling good in your body and mind, is a side effect, or it's a symptom, or it's a sign of not turning away from the present. Because when you feel happy, you're fundamentally okay with the present. Problem two, trying to get somewhere else, clearly in just direct opposition to what we're talking about here. And problem three is having unrealistic expectations, which basically means you're projecting all sorts of ideas about how your current experience will be and how it will be after you have meditated for X amount of years or whatever, right? So, excellent. I think we've covered that, everything we wanted to cover now. And this should help you stick with your meditation and help you really get to the kernel of it. And it might even guide the sort of teachers and resources that you're working with going forward. So thanks a lot, everyone. You can sign up to my newsletter by going to the podcast homepage and following the link to my website, deep-psychology.com. I just do fortnightly updates. I'm not going to spam. I don't spam you with like courses and books and stuff. You know, I mention these things, but a lot of it is free, and I'm not like an annoying salesperson. I just give you like genuinely down-to-earth updates on what I'm up to. And of course, make sure to subscribe to Deep Psychology Podcast. I have new episodes every Wednesday, and I have new snippets of those episodes every Thursday, Sunday, and Tuesday. So stick around. Next week, I'm coming back with another episode on meditation. So I really hope you join me for that. Thanks, everyone. I'll be back soon.